Welcome to Daniel Britt and Friends, an hour of good music and fun conversations featuring gospel music's brightest new artists, as well as legendary tributes and memories from its past. Now, here is Daniel Britt.
You're at the right place for a flashback hour to 2006 National Quartet Convention with some great visitors like Kevin Williams later in the hour, guitarist and funny man on the Gaither Homecoming Tour. But also, we've got the Booth Brothers, Ronnie, Jim, and Michael around our table. And again, this was recorded in 2006, a wonderful flashback of some great music that is still, to this day, 4 years later, outstanding. And let's jump right in with the Booth Brothers.
And the energy you guys bring to the stage, do you get the young group compliment a lot? That you guys are young, fresh, hip group?
We used to.
Yeah. I found a couple gray hairs in my head, man. I'm not getting as many times as I used to.
Well, yeah. I mean, we get a lot of comments about being energetic and fun. And we try to use all that just to, you know, break walls down so people feel like they're in a living room rather than a concert hall.
But we can assure you that's we are what we are. I mean, what you see on stage is what you get off stage, too.
I mean, we're hyper off stage.
Yes, right.
Absolutely. Well, Bill Gaither, and I read this on your website, there was a quote from Bill that said, when you go on stage, guys, give the folks a glimpse of heaven. You remember that quote?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Is that something you try to do not only on Gaither dates, but around the country?
Our motto, the Booth Brother motto is, every night is Carnegie Hall.
Yeah.
So,
whether you feel good or not.
That's exactly right. Whether you feel good or not. A lot of people all across America, they go to their jobs in the morning, they're sick, but they still go.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what? It's time to go to work.
Yeah.
And we do that. And our dad really taught us, and Jim's daddy and mom, Jim's daddy was an evangelist for 40 some years. He knows what hard work is.
Yeah.
And so the three of us think alike in that. So.
Now, Ronnie and Mike, we've already talked about you guys are true brothers.
Brothers, yeah.
That's easy. So let's turn to Jim. Where did he come from? And how do you blend someone who's not true blood family in with this family harmony that you
Well, where he came from, we don't know.
Still trying, huh?
Jim's from Houston. Tell him, man.
I grew up in Houston, Texas. My dad was an evangelist. We traveled the country so many days just in revivals, crusades, churches, holding meetings. Mm-hmm. And Dad was an evangelist, and so I thought, well, he needs some music for the messages. And so I started singing when I was young, working with him, and just had a love for it. And as we're talking about the group's excitement, one of the excitement that I had when I grew up with this kind of music is watching people who would come into the service hurting.
Yeah.
I could see they were carrying a burden. And you sing songs that have hope and have a message to them, and you'll watch the burden lift, and you'd watch them leave with excitement. And so I love this kind of music because what I think separates this music from any other kind of music is the message.
Yeah.
The message has hope in it, and the message can change a life. And that's why I love singing this music. And so it was neat being able to work with Ronnie and Michael. I remember the first time that Mosey Lister, we were talking about Mosey, had ever heard me with a group. He said to me, he said, you could be a brother. You sound like a brother.
Yeah.
And that was a compliment because what a great sound the Booth Brothers have always had.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just honored to be able to come in and try to keep that family harmony and that blend. And it's been a joy. It's great to sing with a couple guys that can sing very well, but more than that, have a ministry and have a heart for helping people. And I knew early on I could be part of something like that.
You carry
So as a singer, you know, you strive for gold records and top charting songs, but as a singer of the gospel, I imagine it's much like a doctor who sees someone come in with a broken leg, they're able to help heal the leg, and when they back out walking again,
absolutely,
that's your ultimate goal, right?
You know, it's the emails and it's the things that people say to you at the record table after the concert that mean the most. And I remember when I started writing songs, I wanted to write something that would help people for eternity. There's a lot of great songs that'll make someone feel good for the moment, but I wanted something that would last, help them on Monday when they had to go to work, as Ronnie said, when they don't feel good, and when they've lost a loved one, something that'll give them hope for eternity. That's what we want to do.
Is that how you would define success?
Oh, absolutely. You know, no matter how many people you're singing in front of, you're singing, when you're singing in front of a crowd of people, you're singing in front of a lot of hurting people, whether they just lost a loved one, whether they just went through a divorce, a child's wayward, you know, whatever the issue may be. The message that we bring, we absolutely believe with all of our hearts, and it, as Jim says, it gives hope, and everybody needs hope. Everybody needs encouragement. You can't listen to gospel music and stay depressed. You can't do it because you keep, it's like Zig Ziglar. We got to work with Mr. Ziglar one time, and he made a statement. He said, you keep feeding your mind those positive lyrics, and God's truth, God's word will not return void. It will affect you. And so that's why this is the word of God set to music. His word will not return void. Our buddy Phil Cross said, you know, lyrics are only half a gospel song. God made those notes, too. And you combine the two, you got a winning package. And so that's why I think gospel music is so effective in people's lives.
Like a child by the seashore, building castles in the sand, foolish dreams I have dreamed. Of the ages, all
It's so interesting. I'm talking to the Booth brothers. And just this morning in the hotel room, my wife was getting ready. I flipped on the TV. And one of the Blues Brothers movies was on. I don't know if it was one or two or eight or, you know, however many they've been made. But it was one where, okay, follow me here. James Brown was in the church in the choir, and they're singing "Let's Go Down to the Old Landmark."
Oh yeah!
And all of a sudden, the Blues Brothers they get into it. So you're right; it's about the lyrics. It's also about the music.
We are on a mission from God.
Hey, we were doing a concert in Illinois one time. You might remember this, Michael. And on the front row, there was a couple ladies that were sitting there, and they had told me during intermission. Yeah. They said, "We came here because we thought it was the Blues Brothers concert." And when it was over, they came up and said, "You know, we weren't disappointed. So we were happy to see you guys, but they thought we was the Blues Brothers."
We have been introduced as the Blues Brothers, the Dove Brothers.
Yeah. Well,
so.
Now, in a concert, who's sort of is there one person who does all the talking and the rest of you sing?
That would be little brother.
Right there.
The quiet, shy one over here.
Now, aren't you kind of the funny man too?
Well, we use a good amount of that humor, and like I said earlier, you know, the energy and the humor, it's all there as a tool to just help people to relax and listen. Eventually, it just helps them to listen to more of what we have to say, because we believe what we have to say is going to help them.
Oh yeah.
And so if you can break those walls down, it's funny. What was it? Sunday? Where were we at Sunday?
We were in Bloomington, Illinois.
Bloomington, Illinois. Yeah. Never happened before. I was talking, setting up something, and I saw this teenager girl running down the aisle, and I thought, and it was a Church of Christ, too. And they were having to sing with the soundtracks and everything, so we were kind of...
That was a first for us.
Back up. You sang with the tracks or without the tracks?
We were singing with the tracks.
Guitar,
the whole world. So the whole thing was, we're kind of being careful as it is, and then I see this girl running the aisle and thinking, Church of Christ, girl running the aisle, something's not right. and a dog had got loose and ran through the auditorium and was coming in.
Ran right down the aisle, right in front of us. Oh, yeah, she was trying to chase that dog down.
So then the dog rather than going to the other aisle, it decided to go right through the middle of the benches, and people were popping up.
Like a Mississippi squirrel.
Yeah. But no revival happened.
Okay. All right.
We had a blast. And so I love moments like that. And everybody laughed. Everybody had a good time. And we just enjoy the moment. It's good to laugh.
Yeah. How many dates you do per year?
We're doing 141 this year, I think.
141. Yeah. So I imagine there's a lot of moments like that on the road.
Oh, there's a bunch.
Yeah. You have one in particular, one funny moment that sticks out in your mind that almost can't be topped.
Well, Michael wore Peg McCamey's dress in Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Yeah, he did.
I heard about that.
Did you hear about that?
I think I did, yeah.
Well, it was for a good cause. News I don't remember what. But
every night's funny when he's on stage. You never can tell what he's going to say.
Do you ever take a sick day? Where you can compare a before and after. If you're not there and somebody else is filling in, it's probably just not the same.
Well, everybody brings their own dynamic to the – I think that's what – really every group, that's what makes them click, is everybody brings something different to the table. So mine's different.
Jim's been with us. We've been all together almost 4.5 years, and we all think alike on stage now. Yeah. I mean, we kind of know what's coming. Jim's gotten to know Michael and I, and there's a real gel there.
Once I got over being scared of Michael, I never knew, you know, he'll run on the stage. You never know where he's going to be or what he's going to do, so you kind of just have to watch out for him.
Oh, yeah.
Now I kind of got him figured out, but it's a lot of fun. It really is.
Now, how do you do that in a pulpit or in a church? I can understand the Gaither stage where it's in the round.
Well, really, you got to know where you are, where you can and can't, but... No, if there's a big pulpit there, we'll behave. You know, we may do some Elvis moves behind it nobody will see.
But
only the choir.
I'm kidding. Don't write me a letter, folks. I'm kidding.
Testify.
First sound that I heard was that the smooth harmonies of the Booth Brothers, the slow to medium type songs, mm-hmm. and that really, in the beginning for me, that defined a Booth Brothers song. But now, like with I'm Feeling Fine, I've heard more of this Cajun style. Is that mm-hmm. is that something that was just unique to a few songs you've done, or is that becoming more and more of your style?
Well, the Cajun sound is really just unique to Still Feeling Fine. We don't have anything else. And you know what? We always strive for that. We always try to create something new. We want the bottom line is we try to find a song that we feel we can communicate its message. Now, if it takes Cajun, Calypso, you know, or whatever it takes.
I think we need to do a polka.
Yeah. It's about time for it to come back around.
Yeah. And but seriously, I mean, we whatever it takes musically to communicate the song the best, and what we can do, we know what our strengths are, and we try to focus on the group's strength, which is the harmony. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's why we titled our latest record Harmony.
Yeah.
And we went back and we did a couple of the old hymns, Tell Me the Story of Jesus. Jim mm-hmm. did a great job on What a Friend We Have in Jesus, and took some songs that our dad recorded with the Rebels Quartet and just kind of updated them a little bit. And there's, you know, it could have been, we call it the schizophrenic sounds of the Booth Brothers.
Right.
I mean, you know, it starts out smooth as silk. And then, you know, we took J.D. Sumner's old classic, What a Morning, where mm-hmm. most, you know, bass singers sing that song. We didn't. We did it different.
Yeah.
And it works. So we love the creative process. And, you know, we just figure if we know we can communicate it, we'll do it.
Whatever it takes.
Still
Brothers on this flashback edition of Daniel Britt and Friends. Hey, I want to remind you, you can check us out online, danielbritt.com, Facebook us, Twitter. We've got a lot of updates there and ways you can stay in touch. danielbritt.com, and get the link to Facebook and Twitter when you visit. And let's flashback, same year, 2006, same place this interview was taking place at the National Quartet Convention. And now Kevin Williams, Gaither homecoming guitarist, funny man, fan favorite all the way around. Here's the conversation we had with Kevin Williams.
Your history is much more than we know as guitarist for Gaither Homecoming or a producer or an engineer in a studio.
More than I know.
Well, you've got to shed some light on it, so do the best you can.
I grew up in this town. I was born in this town in Louisville, Kentucky.
Really?
Grew up in Kentucky, and the Hemp Hills, you mentioned Joel and Labriska Hemp Hill a minute ago.
Mm-hmm.
They were so instrumental in helping me and in encouraging me when I was playing guitar with local groups and that kind of thing growing up. We would occasionally open up for them. Boy, that was a big highlight. We'd brag about that for 2 or 3 months, you know. And Joel would take us on the bus and just talk to us and pray for us and encourage us. And just always, you know, a great influence on a young man. And there have been a lot of those people, George Yontz, a lot of those great people in my life that fostered that. Moved to Nashville when I was playing with Wendy Bagwell back in the 80s. Played for Wendy and the Sunlighters for 5 years.
How'd they find you, or how'd you find them?
Well, prior to that, I'd been with the Blackwood Singers and
Blackwood is James Blackwood?
This was Ron Blackwood's quartet there for about a year. He's over in Gatlinburg now, I think, and that was a good experience for me, and I think one of the big lessons is I learned to drive a bus, because Wendy was looking for a guitar player that played several different instruments, which I did, And then, you know, it's one of those old things about how does the suit fit? You had to drive a bus.
Yeah.
And that got me 5 years in that situation. And I loved it. That was five of the most wonderful years of my life. And then...
So when Bill Gaither and Anthony Berger were talking on the Anthony Berger DVD about being available, being available to play guitar, but being available to drive a bus.
There's a lot of truth in that. Yeah, my job in that situation was to get us to Hardee's at 7 o'clock in the morning.
And, was that a favorite of Wendy's?
Oh, absolutely.
With the cinnamon raisin biscuits or what?
I know. He had a sausage biscuit in the mornings. Yeah. And that was just a great time. And he'd get up, and he was always in a great mood. I mean, I never saw him in a bad mood. And there again, a great influence on a young man's life. And God has always sent those kind of people into my life. Bill Gaither is another one of those people, you know. So after 5 years with Wendy, I wanted to get more into session playing in Nashville, where you play on the CDs and, and eventually producing, which is what I wanted to do. So I was trying to cut back on the schedule. Wendy did about 60 dates a year. And at the time, the vocal band was doing about 30 dates a year, and they were scaling back. As in 92. And so I said, well, that's, you know, this would be good. And I played on a couple of records for Bill and had met him, and he was so kind. And so I started traveling with those guys, and the videos took off. They had just cut Turn Your Radio On.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so then I got to be able to play on a lot of those videos starting about that time. And 14 years later, here we are.
Today's interview with Kevin Williams was recorded at the National Quartet Convention in Louisville, Kentucky. And this took place while Kevin was currently staying closer to his home in Nashville instead of traveling on the road with the Gaithers. Now, he has since returned to the homecoming stage, so when you hear us talk about his time off, you'll know the time and setting in which our conversation took place. And we're going to feature some of the classic acoustic guitar sound that Kevin is so good at producing. The songs on today's program are from Kevin's homecoming guitar project and from Hymns of the Old Country Church, both of these projects recorded in the late 90s. In fact, here's I'll Fly Away with Kevin Williams on guitar taking the lead.
playing for the Sunlighters and doing session work, and that's how you met Bill, was through session work?
I was. That's what I really wanted to do, and it's why I moved to Nashville instead of Atlanta, where Wendy was from. Mm-hmm. So I commuted back and forth to Atlanta for 5 years from Nashville because, you know, that's where I made a living through the week playing on people's records and was trying to get that started. You know, I just I have one thing in mind, and just committed it to the Lord and plowed, mm-hmm. and God blessed it, and so that transition was really smooth and wonderful. I got to produce the last record that Wendy and the Sunlighters ever did. Mm-hmm. I got to produce a record for Jan Buckner after that when she did a solo project that was wonderful. And
was that Revival?
Yeah, was that the name of it? I can't even remember the name
of it.
With
the black...
Yeah.
That was a good one.
She's great. She had taken some songs that she had done with the Sunlighters, and then she put some original stuff with it, too. So.
And there was one she recorded that actually had the old... I guess you took the old master of Wendy's voice.
I firmly promise you.
Yeah, we did that. When she did that live in concert, it really, I don't want to say eerie, but it really had this unique feeling when you heard that voice coming through the loudspeaker after he had passed away, obviously.
Well, we manipulated that a little bit. I had his voice on a multi-track recording that I had done. If I'm not mistaken, I did that in his church, in his home church in Hiram there. And so we were talking about this idea of could we do this song and then bring him in like he used to do the recitation part. And I went home to see how clean those multi-tracks were, and we did some digging. And so after some creativity, that's what it came out. And that was. It was very powerful. Yeah. It was every night when she sang and delivered that powerful testimony to you.
And our lips will never quiver.
friends that have gone on before. One by one, we'll see them cross the silent river. They're leaving every moment or two. So won't you firmly promise me that you'll meet me by the river, and I'll make you this promise too.
Let's talk about Wendy Bagwell for a moment as a person. He was much more than a singer, much more than a manager.
He was awesome. He was a guy you needed to know,
yeah.
I'll tell you. He was exactly what you saw on stage, always fun-loving and up, mm-hmm. and just an encourager.
Is that how he got the stories?
You know what? He was quite a salesman, too. A lot of people don't know this. He had a very successful furniture business in Georgia there.
Still there.
Still there. His daughter, Wendy, runs that place. Yeah. They had very unique items and that kind of thing. He gave me my first living room suit, you know.
Wow.
Just an incredible person.
Part of the salary package, huh?
Yeah. I had to work that off. No.
Yeah.
So he was a big influence on me, and in his storytelling, that evolved, I think, from his salesmanship. He started selling glow-in-the-dark numbers, like you put on the front of your house, you know, like your street number.
Yeah.
For like a dollar or something in whatever year, and he told these stories about selling these new, innovative, glow-in-the-dark. So he always had a line to lay on you, and those stories evolved out of that, and of course, their adventures all over the world. That snake story, you know, in Kentucky and all of that.
Were you there for that?
Oh, no. I heard that every night for 5 years.
You felt like you were there.
But that was quite a few years before me.
Salesman, Wendy Bagwell, and then wasn't there a headache powder or medicine?
Yeah, they endorsed a headache powder probably in the mid-70s, I guess, and that put them on national TV on all those commercials, and I still remember that as... That was really great.
You say that put him on national TV. Did it put the group on?
It did. They were on there as well. Yeah, I remember. See, they would sing a little line. They sang their own jingle for it. You know what? I actually have tape of. They sat down one day when we had microphones going and sang some jingles that they used to sing when they had an early morning radio show in Georgia. I can't tell you the year. And I said, well, who were some of your sponsors? And so they started naming them, and as soon as Jan would say one, they'd start singing the jingle. And I've got three or four of these things on tape at home, and it's fabulous, you know. They covered a lot of ground in their span, you know, of time. Wendy was very professional, too. He was always... He was always on time. He always came off. You know, if you gave him 45 minutes, he came off in 45 minutes. He was just very professional and nothing but good stuff to say about him.
Mm-hmm. And that's a fact with my hand up. Was that phrase from the medicine commercial?
He just always said that. That became a little trademark for him. So that if he were selling you a piece of furniture, he'd say, now this was handmade in Indonesia. Now that's a fact with my hand up. And he would incorporate that into whatever he did.
And that's become a household phrase. It really has.
The big phrase in the snake story was, reckon where do they want one? You know, that was the back door thing.
Yeah. Tell me about Jerry Morrison, and she's just recently passed away.
Mm. She was such a dear person. There again, what you see is what you get. She was kind of like your grandma, you know. She just would mother you, and just very loving. She sang lead in the early years for the trio, and then sang so hard. He nicknamed her Leather Lungs. So she sang so hard, she kind of sang herself down to alto, and Jan, of course, has a beautiful lead voice, and Jan began to sing lead on those songs, and I think Geraldine's voice was even prettier as an alto. She had a great blending quality and just a wonderful style. She was a great person.
Well, back to the fact with my hand up, why do you think Wendy was so trustworthy? Why do people like him so much and really?
You couldn't help it. You just couldn't just help genuine. It. He had a charisma. His daughters tell you the same thing, and they are very much like him. Mm-hmm. You either have that or you don't. He was very believable. There's a great story. Rex Nealon used to love picking on Wendy.
Yeah.
So Rex called the furniture store one morning.
Because he lived near there.
He lived near there, yeah. And he pretended to be, and I don't know the name of the guy, but he was a professional ball player from Atlanta, mm-hmm. and he was very popular at the time. And so Rex pretended to be this guy, and he said, I've ordered a recliner from your store. It was supposed to be here today, and I'm pretty upset it's not here. Now, you told me it'd be here today. And Wendy said, just a minute, I'll check on it. When he came back to the phone, he said, buddy, and of course, Rex had ordered no rocker, you know, no recliner. And Wendy said, buddy, it's on the truck and it's on its way. Listen, what color was that again? And so Wendy was always laying that line on you, but you just couldn't help but love him, you know.
That you told us that you were doing session work, you were still traveling with the Sunlighters, you met, started working with Bill some. What year was it that you became a Gaither? What year did you actually hit the road?
Toward the end of 1992. That had wrapped up about 5 years with Wendy there. And I told Wendy my whole reasoning. You know, I said, I want to establish some sort of recording mm-hmm. career try to stay at the house a little more. So he totally understood that. And I had played on about 3 records for the Statesman at the time. Bill had reorganized the Statesman with Jake and Hovey. Mm-hmm. So he had produced these records. And they had released Goodbye World Goodbye that Anthony Berger did this flash of an intro on. I mean, it was 160 beats a minute, you know.
Yeah. So, and a lot of groups have used that same track.
They have, Even our homecoming people did that same track. So I had done 3 records for him and had met him on several occasions, and he'd just been golden to me. The guy that was playing for them at the time was Bill's son-in-law, Barry Jennings. And Barry was coming off the road. He and his wife were having children, and so that, you know, that's always a big factor of staying at home. Yeah. And Barry was going to manage the vocal band and manage Bill's company for him. Barry is a business head, you know. Really
and,
good guy.
And is currently the CEO.
He is the CEO
company.
Of Springhouse, yeah. And has made a lot of very big decisions that have paid off for them. So a friend of mine called me and said, "Hey, they're looking for somebody. You'd be perfect for this. You want to do it?" And I said, "Yeah." And within about 30 minutes, they said, "You're going out this weekend to Port Huron and somewhere else, Grand Rapids, I think, yeah. to do a couple concerts." And so part my duties were to play bass and guitar and to run some soundtracks. Mm-hmm. Whenever Bill went to the piano to play, my job was to play bass with him mm-hmm. and then play guitar with the soundtracks. So seemed easy enough. And I got out there and I was scared to death. And I think I stopped The King Is Coming in the middle of that one in Chicago about my first or second weekend out. And there are some memorable stage fright times there. But I had never played in front of crowds that big. You know, and the Gaither name always pulled in huge crowds, and of course those songs. And we were doing the Gaither Vocal Band, the Gaither Trio, and maybe a couple of guests like the Cathedrals or Buddy Green or Janet Paschal, yeah. somebody like that.
And you were working with tracks, and I've seen you. And yeah. Those tracks, at least in the beginning, were they the mini disc, right?
In the beginning, they were DATs.
Oh, so you had to fast forward just like
a cassette. Yeah, I had two DAT players. Mm-hmm. Now, for anybody listening who doesn't know what a DAT is, that stands for Digital Audio Tape. It's an acronym, and it's pretty much a dinosaur now. We don't use that, but everybody uses hard drives and things to store information on. Back then, there was a tiny, smaller than a cassette tape form of recording, and it was digital, and it worked out very well, except you couldn't get from cut 1 to cut 15 very fast. It would go kind of speed through there, you know. So I had two DAT players with identical tracks in both of them, and I would go from this machine to that machine.
And using a counter? Or
yeah. It was crude.
Well, then Minidisc came along, and did you eventually use Minidisc?
We went to CDs from DATs.
Okay.
And the CDs were great. They just skipped all
dial.
The time.
Oh, I see.
If you got on a shaky floor and it was the wrong kind of player, they would skip. And so lots of problems there. We went to mini discs after that. We went from mini discs to computer hard drives, a 360 Systems broadcast type machine. Yeah. And then now I think we're in iTunes or something. So it has moved, you know.
Have you found that each new technology has been more reliable than the past, the previous one?
Yeah, and you have to progress. Now, I don't do those tracks anymore. In fact, I don't do a lot of those live dates now. I'm still doing all the TV stuff that I did with Bill. Mm-hmm. But my girls are 5 and 7, so I'm trying to stay at the house a little more and still do some producing and that kind of thing. So the guy that runs that stuff is Rory Rigdon, and I think he's got everything in a computer outfit now. And and God bless him. I pray for him every night, and I'm glad he's got it.
Sunday school lesson, and Sister Beulah sang her song, and the preacher preached a fiery sermon. Naturally, he went a little too long. It was 12:45 when he finally got done, and we all went outside. And this ain't no joke. The women folks had food stacked 3 feet high. There was chicken and beans and corn and greens. I ate till I was sick. And then me and the boys got our guitars, and we went inside to pick, and it sounded something like this. Mm-hmm. get to go to a church homecoming. Take your guitar and your friends. And if you can't play, that's okay. You can sit there and use your hands to clap on the beat. Let me hear you. Oh, yeah. And it'll sound just like this.
Homecoming guitarist Kevin Williams here on Daniel Britt and Friends. And all this hour, we're playing some great guitar music, instrumental music that Kevin has produced and performed as well. Kevin is a producer. He has a studio in Nashville, Upfront Studios, Kevin Williams Productions, and Kevin is a great guitarist and instrumentalist. Now let's go back to the conversation that was recorded at the National Quartet Convention. And as I mentioned earlier, this was recorded at a time where Kevin was not traveling with the Gaither Homecoming Concert Tour. Instead, he was staying home, doing studio work, and being with his family. At this point in the conversation, we're talking about the Gaither Homecoming Tour and his responsibilities while on stage. And I asked Kevin about rolling with some of the punches during a live, sometimes impromptu, concert performance.
And a lot of times, Bill will do impromptu stuff. And so,
a lot of times? What do you mean? We never had a set list in 13 years. We never had a set list.
Well, the story I've got backstage, yeah, you know, I would see the list, and he sometimes handwritten, sometimes
typed. But it was an artist list.
It was an artist list.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. And but there was this one time, he had the artist lineup of who was to follow who. But then over it all was a big Sharpie black X and two words, be ready.
Be ready. Stay close was usually, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, when I went there, there was no set list, and he would just tell everybody stay close. Now, we only had a couple other artists on in addition to the vocal band,
yeah.
You know, and I knew what the vocal band would open up with. Usually it would be Temporary Home or something mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. And so I knew the first song, and after that, I didn't have a clue. And Bill would call the song on the heels of the previous song. He'd look around and say, bow to my knees or whatever, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Bill is not the clearest speaking person, and Gaither, if you're listening, you know that's right. So it's hard to read his lips, you know, and that became sort of an art form. And if you've been in our concerts and you see me shaking my head like, what? It's because I couldn't understand his, you know, his phrasing, and he'd look at me and go, and that's about what it would be, you know. So that became fun, and trying to interpret him.
Kevin Williams on Daniel Britt and Friends. And, of course, Booth Brothers at the beginning of this program is a double whammy flashback. Enjoyed bringing you these highlights again. And don't forget, you can always check out our website online at danielbritt.com. Facebook us and Twitter links available there as well. And, again, that's danielbritt.com. Britt is B-R-I-T-T. Hey, I'll see you back here next week.
You've been listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. Each week, Daniel brings you exciting music, conversation, and news updates from the world of Southern Gospel. You can hear many of the interviews, again, online at danielbritt.com. Make a date next week for Daniel Britt and Friends.